Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hey, Guru Nation, welcome back to, this is already episode 90 of the podcast, Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This is Dan Sfera. This is also going to go on YouTube. Hello to everyone on YouTube. Make sure you go to the podcast and vice versa, right? Or don't, if you prefer one. Just stick with that one. Stick with what works, right? So I've got Joe Dustin, Principal of Mobile Health Metadata. Hopefully I said that right, Joe.
Yeah, you nailed it. Nice job.
Excellent, man. So why don't you introduce yourself? Like, who are you? What do you do? How'd you get into this space? Just like a little Cliff Notes, Cliff Note bio.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me on. I've been following you for a long time, and this is actually the first time we finally got a chance to talk. So I'm pretty excited to come join you and your audience. My name is Joe Dustin, and I'm the principal of mobile health at Metadata. Metadata is a now large software company in Manhattan that, if I was to give you the Cliff Notes summary, more than 50% of clinical trials started in the world today are running on the Metadata platform. And that means a lot of things. That means most of your people that view this podcast probably know what Metadata Rave is.
Mm-hmm. You probably use Metadata Rave. Most of the sites and CRAs, yep. That's one of the big ones, if not the biggest.
So that's the thing that started Metadata, right? It was electronic data capture to capture data from sites to speed the time of running clinical trials, get better data faster, close the database, get the drug to market, right? Mm-hmm. I've been at Metadata for 10 years. I've been here since 2008. And in that time, the amount of growth we've seen has been insane. And I think that's a testament to that the technology works really well. We have the right people running the place. The innovation never dies, and we just keep having a good experience and good software that actually works, right? So in my mind, Metadata does way more than EDC. In fact, in the world of like a coming world of eSource, as the process changes beyond what today would people would consider normal EDC, that whole thing is changing. EDC, I would call it clinic. It's collecting clinic data, formerly known as EDC. There's a bunch of things coming in from a clinic that are not just being hand typed into a computer. There's labs, there's questionnaires from patients, there's diaries at home, there's mobile health wearable devices, there's could be some genomic data, there could be all kinds of stuff that are considered like a source of data. We're pulling that into a technology platform that pharma companies, biotechs, and CROs, and all the acronyms you can think of are all using to better conduct clinical trials, but also plan them in the front end, and then do things with the data on the other side to submit their data to FDA and do all the data management and biostats things they have to do, but then take that data and in true like machine learning fashion, feed that back mm-hmm. to plan the next study and mm-hmm. learn from, right? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff we're doing. It won't get into all of it, but EDC is by far the thing that started us, but it is by no means the only thing we're doing. And so I'm sure some of your audience sites and CRAs out there have used a number of different tools, and I focus on the mobile health side of the world, which is a bit of a growing area. So
yeah, so tell me about that, because when I was coordinating, and this was, geez, like 7 years ago max. No, 5 years ago was the most recent time I was coordinating. And like sometimes I would want to enter data or answer a query from my phone. And depending on, first of all, I didn't know if it was even allowed, but let's get besides that. I'm asking for a friend.
Work in a browser, it's allowed.
It is? Okay, good. So I would do it, but some of them would be extremely difficult, almost impossible, and others would be pleasant. And I don't remember the ones that were pleasant, but I remember the ones that were awful because I couldn't get my job done. But so mobile, I can only imagine going forward, like, I'm also a CRA, contract CRA. I moonlight. I have like one gig. Okay, it's a small gig.
Yeah.
I still can't answer queries as a CRA from my mobile. Like I can't confirm a visit. There's certain things I can't do. Like I have to be at my desktop or my laptop.
Yeah.
So what's the future of this? I mean, I can only imagine that it's going to be mobile friendly for everything, right?
Absolutely. So let me give you a little peek into the future. I will say the future is determined by a number of things. Determined by users standing up and saying we need new tools to do our job better. It's companies saying we need to change our business model in the way that we conduct the monitoring activities of a study. I'll get to that in a minute, and the fundamental shift in the CRO business model. And then being able to have technology that can just work anywhere. But what drives that, honestly, is you have people asking for it. But the thing that finally made it start to happen and actually have companies start to move and adopt was when the regulation changes. And when that happens, people move and say, oh, we have to be in compliance, which means we have to have new software, which means the software companies need to build the new software, which means all these things need to happen. So the whole idea of, you probably heard the buzzword, risk-based monitoring.
Oh, right? Sure.
Yeah, sure. People have many names for it. We call it strategic monitoring. Other companies call it intelligent monitoring. It's all basically the same thing. The ICH E6 guidance in the document, like literally ICH paragraph E line 6 or however it is, states all of the things that probably need to happen. And what we've done at Medidata is create this sort of strategic monitoring dashboard. So when the next time a monitor logs into the Medidata world, usually the first thing you see is Rave, right? EDC. That shouldn't matter anymore. The first thing you see is this new dashboard that shows you all your studies, all of your tasks and things you need to take care of, all of your issues that would typically be managed in a CTMS type system that is no longer in a monolithic old CTMS anymore. Issue management. You have things that the machine is finding for you as a CRA that you weren't necessarily looking for. Outliers. Blood pressures that are like conspicuously the same for like 7 patients in a row. Right? I mean, that happens sometimes. Where in every other site, it's normal, right? Or it's in a normal range. We're looking for clusters of outliers to the for trends. So we're applying
favorite
a lot of
numbers,
machine learning.
Site favorite numbers.
Sure, right?
Yeah.
We're looking for, we're using machine learning to find outliers, to help CRAs remotely monitor sites before they get there. And they're not spending their time doing source data verification on paper. In fact, most of the paper is starting to go away. What they're doing is before they get to the visit, they're looking at what's happening at the site, looking at the quality, looking at the risks, tracking their issues, and having a better interface to do that so that when they go there, they can do the checks they need to do and focus on the real. In some cases, CRAs are auditing the site in many cases, but they're really just checking for the clinical things, making sure the procedures are being followed, right? And so in my mind, the future of monitoring is the technology will do a lot of the heavy lifting for you. You won't be sending armies of CRAs out every 6 weeks just because. You'll be able to look at data remotely because more of the data will be coming in remotely. This is as eSource sort of picks up too, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in the regulations that actually doesn't say that you can't enter your data directly into an EDC system without a binder, without a paper binder. Problem is that nobody does that. They think about it as a 5-day afterthought that they take all their papers and go into their data entry room and you or someone on your staff ends up go doing that, right?
So manually. You could, there's nothing against federal regulations to just enter all your data directly into the EDC.
That's correct.
Right? Okay, I did not know that.
The key is that the interface needs to make sense for the way a site works, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have a number of companies out there, right? You have Medidata's new version of Rave worked great on a tablet. They call it RaveX, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like a redesigned front end that really works great on a tablet. Companies like Clinical Ink have a tablet. Have you used them before?
Didn't they get acquired by DrugDev? I think they were using them.
They did? I haven't heard that yet.
Okay. We have used them. We actually have one study where we're using eSource right now, only for certain rating assessments. So we keep hearing about it, but we're actually still seeing most of our studies as paper. But I actually enjoy the eSource. I actually use it, so I'm one of the users, and at first I was, you know, a little resistant to it, but you know, it's you forget that you're using it sometimes, and it also helps sites remain compliant to the protocol, so it doesn't allow for backdating, so some sites might not like it, but that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, yeah, you shouldn't be doing that anyways, and this is just the way it's going to be. But we're going to get into a lot of the pros and cons from the site's perspective and from the CRA's perspective in this interview. So yeah, I do want to talk about some of those real issues.
You said that, you know, you forget you're using it. That's because the user experience is good, right?
That's right.
When you actually have it. So the thing that, so like EDC on a tablet sometimes isn't enough, right? It can work better on a tablet. And I think that companies are getting there. Clinical Ink did a, it almost looks like the binder, but on a tablet, right? And still maintaining the old paper process in a way, but it's electronic and you can write notes all over the place. And that's cool. I don't know if going back to the paradigm of paper on a tablet is the right thing, but I've heard sites like it, which is kind of cool, right? And so that data can flow into a bigger system as well, because once you capture that eSource data, then what? Where does it go?
Right.
Where does eSource data go to thrive? Because metadata is more than EDC, it comes to us. It eventually comes to us. Or it goes to some data warehouse somewhere, right?
It's just big data at this point. Metadata is, like the name suggests,
well, it's data. Clinic data. It's clinic data. Mm-hmm. You know, except that they could be doing the workflow in a different way. So I like the idea of having a tablet that almost kind of looks like your charting workflow. I also like the idea of having a different kind of system that doesn't use a stylus and doesn't use handwriting recognition and uses like more of an EDC type system that makes it easier to enter data, because the goal is the same. But I think what I've seen is that eSource works really well depending on the type of site. So if a site already has an EMR, electronic medical record, many times they don't want another tool. They don't want EDC. They don't want another eSource thing showing up on their front door. They want to just use the EMR. And that's mostly in like oncology studies or any of those types of studies where you're in a hospital or a clinic. But if
your medication list is like 100 meds and you don't want to just manually type those back into an EDC.
And so you're in your history is a mile long and you have like, and all this stuff that's already there, demographics, medical history, vital signs, labs and meds, right? All that stuff, you just suck it into a system. And so people are doing that today. We're doing that as well. Definitely not on the mainstream, but we are doing that. I think some of the EMRs have finally started to turn a corner where the standards are a bit more stable and people are actually using them. So you can actually get your data out of your EMR. I mean, you live in outside of LA, so can you get your own data from your own doctor today?
No.
Neither can I. Yeah.
I can get my lab sometimes. You know, I go to like this small private lab and I'm able to sometimes get my lab results, but usually not. Like when I went to Quest, I couldn't get that.
And so how do people think that we're going to be able to crack the EMR integration into research if you can't even get your own data from your own doctor, right? And so it's slowly happening. It's getting better. And there are people working on this. I've been in a number of meetings. My colleagues have been in a number of conferences. And we're doing actual projects with actual pharma companies that are doing this across. They're starting in health systems that all have a single EMR. Like, you know, you go to Partners or Kaiser or Geisinger or all of these like types of, they all have a network of sites, right? And they all use the same system. So that's kind of the first place I see people starting. But
that would make the most sense.
It's another eSource, right?
Mm-hmm.
So EHR is eSource data. Direct data capture into a system, that's eSource. So direct data entry into some system. It could be a, it all depends on what the front end looks like.
Sure.
That's really what it's all about, is a front end that makes sense for what you're doing in a clinic. ePro, mobile health, these types of things are all eSOAR.
Yeah, patient-reported outcomes, right? So we'll get into patient-centricity, but pros and cons. This is real-world stuff. I just got off the phone right before our interview with a client in Florida, okay? And they are learning EDC. So what we do, shameless plug, we help people who want to start their own research clinics do just that, right? We'll get you studies. We'll negotiate the budgets. We'll do your source docs. We'll help you write your SOPs. We'll help you find PIs. But then once you start getting your studies, then we help you manage your operations. And this client has been with us for about a year, is figuring out the EDC stuff, right? So he's asking, hey, how quickly shall data be entered? Like, how fast do I need to respond to queries? And I tell him, okay, from a payments perspective, you want to get the data in as quickly as possible, because that usually triggers a payment, right? A monitor can't confirm it. However, there is a deeper, there are levels to this, okay? So it's not enough to just do the bare minimum to get paid. You have to pay attention to the fact that sponsors, CROs, are tracking everything you do. I have one site. We are one of the top enrollers in a very difficult to enroll study, all right? Probably top three enrollers, randomized, all that stuff. We are like bottom three in query responsiveness. So we were put on a screening hold, and the sponsor actually needs us to continue enrolling, but they want us to get our act together. So they put us on a screening hold. And so imagine if you're not one of the top enrolling sites. Like, let's say you're one of the bottom enrolling sites and you're a bottom performing site, you're going to get dropped. And you're probably not going to get asked to do future studies. So pay attention to these things, because big data, this is great. You know, it helps make trials more efficient, hopefully, but you're being tracked. And if you can't adapt to this new way of doing things in 2018 and going forward, someone else will, and that's going to cut you out, and that's not obviously not where anyone wants to be.
You couldn't be more accurate. Sponsors track everything.
Everything. Big Brother is watching.
And at Medidata, I can tell you everything about how sites operate. I can tell you the things I can tell you. The clients, sponsors, pharma, whatever you want to call them, subscribe to software that runs their studies. We're one of them, right? And because they run their studies in that software, they have access to various types of insights and analytics that give them operational data on everything. Now, the usual stuff they're tracking is study build time to first patient in, how long it take to build study. How long is it to first patient in to last patient out? How long did the study go on? Last patient out to database lock is a big one. Like, when was the last patient last visit? How long did it take us to get all the data cleaned up and ready for analysis?
Last patient into database lock, you said?
Yeah. And that's usually something that in the old days of, like, the old pre-EDC in the paper world, it was two months, right? Now it's weeks or days.
Right.
Over the majority, right? Some people can do it faster, even can do it in a day, right? I've seen it 24 hours. But you're cleaning the data along the way, right? But the analytics that I'm also seeing are, who are the top enrolling sites? Who are the non-enrolling sites? Who are the sites that respond to queries the fastest? Who are the sponsors that are causing the most queries? Who are the sites? Who are the sites that are, here's even more, we're collecting so much clinical, operational, and financial data on studies. But I can tell you which sites are the highest performers, but also the highest paid, and which site, and why are these sites the lowest performers, but we're paying them the most? Why is that, right? Yeah. Because we have all the grant data. Medidata owns something called the PICUS database. It's the—
what is that called?
The PICUS database. I would think that most sites that you work with or whatnot, when they get grants from sponsors, they usually use a tool to determine what they call fair market value. And after the Sunshine Act came into play and sort of prevented people, the Sunshine Act came into play to prevent like pharma reps from taking doctors to the World Series so they can prescribe drugs. That's really why it came around.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it also affected, like, I literally can't give someone a pen without them documenting it in some cases, right? I think it's like a $20 after 20, like, they got to document it. But they also need to make sure that people aren't overpaying sites and also not underpaying sites, right? and it has to be within a fair market value. So these tools are out there to say, I can plop in everything from that protocol that you're going to get, and a site is going to review. We're also going to get the protocol, they're going to get a grant, you know, offering, and they're going to have, it's going to be a couple things. It's going to be either procedures that are listed and what the cost of those procedures that they're willing to pay, or it's going to be a cost per patient or a cost per visit or however, it's different ways to model it out, right? So I can tell you for like what's the indication type study that you typically work with?
Schizophrenia.
All right. So like a phase two schizophrenia study in the U.S., more specifically in the L.A. area, typically for this type of study with these procedures would cost this on the 25th, 50th, and 75th percentile. So a sponsor has this data. And they use that to go out and make an offering to a site, and they give you either a spreadsheet or they give you online access to a portal where they have everything all right there, and you can respond and either like change things or change the overhead, and the usual stuff is there. And then it's tracked and measured against the benchmark. And they know they have a range that they'll be able to like change in, right? They have a negotiation range, and they have a range they'll never go over. And so these tools are used typically, what I typically see, honestly, especially if it's a competitive enrollment scenario, which might not be schizophrenia, but other scenarios.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
I hear clients, I just want to pay sites at the highest level that's fair and allowed, and tell them that I'm using tools to determine fair market value, which, by the way, is our tools based on actual negotiated data. So this isn't like algorithmically defined, or it's like actual data that was signed on the dotted line and put back in the database. I'd rather pay you at the highest level and then just have one round of negotiation, because the biggest cause of clinical trial delays is contract negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
They want to stop it. And so they use these tools to help speed the process along. They're not trying to lowball anyone. They're not trying to underpay you for your services. They're trying to pay you fairly, but they're also tracking everything about
you. So are you telling me that...
They're going to pay for quality in the future.
So are you telling me that they have a predetermined range for different site metrics from prior studies?
Yeah, they do.
So that's how they give their initial offerings, is based on the data they're able to get from that investigator. And if it's a research naive investigator, then they probably have like a range for that one, right?
And some of the data is based on, like, they'll also have the data they've paid your site in the past. And if they have no data on your site, they have what sites like you in this indication, in this location.
Okay.
You know, all the way, I can go all the way down to the individual site level, but in some cases it's just the region, the metro region, like LA area, San Francisco area, or California, or the United States, or Romania, or
sure.
UK, or,
yep.
Yeah. So it's a lot of that,
and that's.
I don't think it's anything to be worried about. And usually in the grant, it'll say at the bottom, we are using this like third party tool to determine fair market value, and you know, in hopes that we don't go back and forth for weeks in grants.
So you think a negotiation will eventually at the site level not be necessary, or because I think it's always going to be necessary.
I think it's always going to be necessary. There's always going to be that. Do you ever buy anything off Craigslist for the price they put there?
Right, yeah. So there's always going to be a range. Like, yeah, okay, well, this is what they say is the best, but you can probably get 20% more. Or there's always some place you can put the cost. Like what we've found was overhead ranges drastically from site to site based on their overhead policy, right? So. You know, you can always get more negotiation. And so this is one of the services we offer our clients. So interesting that you guys have, and it's not just metadata studies that you have these metrics for, right? These analytics. It's all studies that opt into this. You said the PICUS, or what is it?
It's called the PICUS database. The product name is called Metadata Grants Manager.
Okay.
And you're right. The majority of the studies that go in there are people that are using the rest of the software at Metadata, but people that are not using, like Rave, for example, they're still using the tool to do their grants, and they're putting all the data back in there. So
this is like Transcelerate for the vendors.
Kind of. I don't know if I'd make the exact analogy, but
okay.
It's because Transcelerate is more about standards and operating procedures as opposed to they're not trying to standardize costing and commoditize it at all. They know the value of your services. They know that. Sponsors want to have. Well, they want to be the sponsor of choice, right? That's the big thing, and they know you need to make a profit. They know you need to, you know, make margin to run your business, but they also the major reason they're doing it, in fact, most of the sponsors that I talk to are not doing it to cut costs. They're doing it to speed negotiations.
Okay.
That's the main reason. They just don't want it. Every time they delay something, it just further extends the time their trial's on and the time a competitor could get their drug approved first.
It's those CROs that are trying to cut costs, Joe.
No comment.
They are trying to cut costs sometimes.
What's interesting about, and talk about how CROs need to cut costs and just becoming more efficient in general. Right. Mm-hmm. So I, as a technology company, have technology to make a company like a CRO more efficient. What they need to do is take that and change their process. And in some cases, some of their costs will go down. In many cases, their costs should go way down, but their margins could actually get bigger. Right. Which in theory, if they reduce their costs, they could become more competitive. It's just a matter of how much they implement. I'll give you an example. Going back to your the whole negotiation thing. Once that grant is accepted and we have a negotiation done, that gets sent to the system and starts automating the payments to you, right? What's the number one frustration in clinical trials for you?
Slow payments, actually.
Low payments or incorrect payments?
How about no payments? Monica, Monica, we're waiting. She's here doing some IP accountability, but yeah. She's one of the coordinators. She's been on this sponsor, which shall remain nameless. And in this case, a sponsor, a big one, for months now, okay? And so zero is our issue. So there could always be better ways of doing things when it comes to payments. Usually you can blame the CROs, but not always. Sometimes the sponsors are inefficient.
Yeah, I definitely don't always blame the CROs. I blame the process.
The process.
You would not believe how many companies do a process that is completely manual and reconciling manual spreadsheets and sending it to 17 different steps before it ends up in someone to go cut a check.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is embarrassing in the world of direct deposits and mobile payments.
You guys do payments, right?
We do. We do.
Metadata. Yeah, I'm talking to Metadata. They do payments. You guys in drug dev, I've noticed new payments. So you guys, when did you guys get into payments, site payments?
It's probably been 3 years ago, maybe more.
And what's the feedback?
Actually, probably 4 years ago. People like getting paid on time.
Do we get paid on time from Metadata?
I don't think you would know. You wouldn't know it's us. It would be.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't actually come into Metadata. Okay. Because from DrugDev, they do. They come in a DrugDev check.
Yeah, it might have a logo on there. We probably would actually put the more, it would be branded to whoever's actually your contract.
So white-labeled. Yeah, it'll be white-labeled. Sure. Okay. Interesting.
But the payment module is set up, so it, you know, so you set up your budget, right? You negotiate the contract. You set up the payment system and attach it to your EDC, and as you're entering data faster, you're getting paid faster because you're triggering events that, like, visit completed. And if a monitor comes in and they're using newer strategic monitoring options to make their job more efficient, then they're closing out visits faster, which means usually the checks get cut after their visits are closed out.
Correct.
And for using eSource to get the data in there faster, there's no 5-day delay to get the data in the first place, which means the monitor can do that. You see how this is snowballing?
Yes, it's all snowball. So that's the pros. Faster payments, more efficient, like, I guess, a little more streamlined for the site and the CRA. The cons, you better keep up with this or you're going to get left out. Like, you might not be in business much longer. And that's actually a serious conversation I had to have with one of my own sites. They're used to doing things the old way of, you know, yeah, this should be entered in 3 days, but sponsors usually allow 5. No, that's not the case anymore. They want it within 1 day now, 2 days max. So you have to adapt or that's it, right? And that's the way it is in every industry.
I'll also throw your sites a little bit of a bone, too, because if the technology they're given sucks.
It does. In that case, it does suck. Yeah.
And they can't do their job faster without putting a lot of resources and time and brain power into it. It should just be easy. If it's not easy, then doing it in a day is really hard.
It's
right?
Not easy. It's not Metadata. Let's put it that way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Metadata is like, I mean, even I've told people, even I have no relationship with Metadata, but they're one of the best. You guys in BioClinica, from my experiences, and if you ask most of my coordinators, that's what they prefer. But yeah, in this case, it's not. They're using multiple vendors for different things, and one query causes like 10 more, and it's a chain reaction. And then the coordinator gets frustrated because they have 10 more patients to see, and they don't have time for that. And they just start snowballing, like you said, snowballing earlier. Well, this is also snowballing, and it's it produces negative outcomes for us. But we still have to improve. I mean, we have to react to what the market gives us, and that's what we have.
So those are some of my thoughts on the trends of what's happening, like under the covers in clinical trials and technology. That there's, you know, we're trying to give better technology to the end users, the sites, the people that are actually seeing patients, so that people in the back end, pharma, CROs, can run their operations more efficiently and get their. It's really all about speed and operational efficiency. The process needs to change.
I just started investing in cryptocurrencies. Okay, so I'm like all into this now. How soon can I negotiate to be paid in Bitcoin? How soon? How far away are we from that?
I don't know. I just found out what the whole blockchain thing was about a week or two ago.
It's pretty cool.
It was about a month ago when I first heard it. So can you get paid in Bitcoin? Probably not anytime soon.
Not anytime soon. Okay.
Yeah. Did you hear about the story about the guy who bought a Domino's pizza for like 10,000 Bitcoins?
I heard that. Yeah. And someone bought a house here in California. Someone bought like a Tesla. So they're starting to make big price tag.
He bought Domino's for 10,000 Bitcoins in 2010. You know how much that's worth now?
Yeah, that's worth a lot. 2010 Bitcoin was like $1.
Yeah, it's worth $53 million now. It's worth a lot.
Wow. See, that's the kind of arbitrage I want.
Yeah. Right?
So I'd get paid in Bitcoin now when it's 5,500, and they're predicting by 2020 it could be 50,000.
So a couple things. It's hard to speculate on Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a few cool things to learn from the process. Number one, if you want to learn more about Bitcoin, there's a few websites out there. There's some of the exchanges like Coinbase and whatnot. I listen to podcasts just like you. There's a guy named, I mean, I see a book on your desk there, Kevin Rose, Tim Ferriss, Tools mm-hmm. of Titans. Mm-hmm. Great book. So one of Tim Ferriss's good buddies is a guy named Kevin Rose, who started the website dig.com. And he's a tech entrepreneur, lives in the back in the Bay Area now, but he's been getting into Bitcoin recently. So his latest podcast with his old buddy named Alex Albrecht used to do a podcast called Dig Nation, which is like Wayne's World for tech, basically. Mm-hmm. Two guys mm-hmm. drinking beer, talking tech. They did a whole thing on Bitcoin, and you know they have it bought like a mine for Bitcoin, which means you have a little box in the back of your office just plugged into the internet, solving complex math problems and mining bitcoins. That's how you make free bitcoins.
Right.
And there's a whole process to it, but they explain like how it started and what they're doing now, and probably, you know, it takes about 8 months to kind of pay off your what you invested in it in a way.
And your utility bill. So my wife, if I did that, my wife would be pissed. She pays the utility bills and she'd be pissed.
But the interesting thing about Bitcoin, like take the money part out of it, talk about the underlying technology of the blockchain mm-hmm. and how that relates to healthcare and clinical research. I went to a conference called the Disruptive Innovations in Pharma Conference in Boston. That was at the beginning of September.
Okay. Well, gosh, there's a conference every week, I feel like, right?
I've started to go to the smaller conferences now that are more targeted, and there's some big name people that are doing really cool things, and you actually kind of can talk to them as opposed to DIA or SCDM or these
or bio.
Bio. It's just massive. You just can't. It's just too overwhelming. But they're different reasons to go, different targets, right? But D-Pharma is all about this innovative stuff in digital health and pharma.
D-Pharma. I gotta go.
It's really cool. You should go. It's every year in Boston. So Munther Barra is a guy from Pfizer who kind of runs a lot of this. He's a big systems guy at Pfizer, and he's actually in the Boston area. And so they're running an event in the beginning of November at Pfizer on blockchain. It's Pfizer and Deloitte and IEEE. Like the organization are going to be doing this thing. Wow. And so he presented the whole thing at this DFARM conference on blockchain, and he just tried to like make it consumable by people, like normal people, us humans that don't understand crypto anything.
Yep.
And I don't know if I'm doing him justice here, but let me see if I can explain and reiterate what I think I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Blockchain in the healthcare world could mean that your health records would be truly owned by you. And if the health record systems and the underlying infrastructure that was running that is really just, blockchain is really just an encrypted database, right? Mm-hmm. But every record would be protected and have to be authorized, and the entire chain of events that happen, the audit trail, if you will, is never deleted. It's immutable, which means you can't change anything, and it just always adds to the blockchain. So if I was to share my medical records with Dr. Smith, it would show that Joe Dustin's medical records were created and shared with him, but were created by this, you know, Cedars-Sinai and given to me at this date. And then I went and shared that to somebody else and they can see it. But because I share that in the blockchain world, like, not only did I share it with Dr. Smith, but Cedars-Sinai and me got like a copy of that automatically because I already have access to it. And they all see now that Dr. Smith has access to it and they trust.
Interesting.
Right, so it's like this trust chain as well. So everybody trusts each other that now I can have access to this.
But that I can only give him. That might be able, fascinating.
I might be also be able to give him access to just like one data point, right, down to the data point.
Right.
Level. It's not like you see these hacks that happen in Equifax and Yahoo and all these other people, right? They crack some database, they get access to the whole thing, and they take it all.
Right.
You would have to crack every single individual record in the blockchain, which would be nearly impossible.
So blockchain technology is just getting started. I mean, I can see 20 years from now this used in source data for research.
Well, that's so... So if you were using the medical record system to illustrate that, now it's turned to research. What happens if I want to take that data... And I now own my data. And when Apple comes out with whatever app they're trying to do to manage personal health records, because they've been quietly acquiring companies, they're going to have an ecosystem of apps to support and use that data that you're going to have now on your phone. And let's just say it's using blockchain technology, which, by the way, blockchain is not a product. It's not an app. It's an underlying thought process and infrastructure that like everyone is just going to have to use.
Somehow, it's like ubiquitous, like email became.
Or,
right?
Or Amazon Web Services is running every website in the world, right?
Right.
And so if I want to enroll in a research study, I could bring my own data. Forget this EMR integration stuff. I'm just going to give you my data. It's trusted. It's accurate. It's the source.
It's anonymous.
And it's anonymous until I give you access.
Right.
And imagine me coming to a clinical trial and you have to go into an ECRF and fill out all the stuff in your screening visit, your demographics, vital signs, medical history, medications. Stuff. What if I could bring all that with me? And click a couple buttons and give you access, and it just fills in that stuff for you. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to integrate to a medical record in your hospital. I just brought my own data with me, but it's trusted data because it was encrypted in the blockchain.
And, so are we
and now? I just share.
Are we? Because we have a lot of CRAs watching, and we'll wrap up. This is a great. We'll do a part two, maybe a future podcast. One for the CRAs that are worried. You know, they're worried that technology is going to replace them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, no one can look 20 years out because that's way too far ahead. But next 10 years, maybe next 5, do you see the role of the CRA changing? Do you think their jobs are in jeopardy? What are your just your opinion, not metadata, just Joe's opinion?
Sure. The role of the CRA has already changed. Mm. It will continue to change. Just like I see, you know, I can give an ePro app to a patient on their own phone, and they can fill out data every day about how they feel. They can come into the clinic and fill out that data, and it gets into one place, and that makes a monitor's job easier to look at data in near real time. None of this delay of waiting for data, none of this SDV at the clinic. Their job is not an auditor anymore, right? Which in many cases kind of was, and nobody liked doing that. Nobody liked going into the back records room where you stick them in the most uncomfortable room possible,
right?
And doing binder reviews and source data. Nobody likes doing that. The role of a CRA is absolutely going to change. It's going to be using data that is presented to you in a much easier way. You don't necessarily have to be a technical person. Mm-hmm. This will become as ubiquitous as you having to use Microsoft Word for your job, right?
Right.
You have to use a system that gives you the data to be able to make decisions and do your job. But your job is no longer doing the manual work that machines can now do.
Yeah.
And so if you are a CRA that's been in the business for 20 years, your job is changing.
Yeah.
If you are a CRA that's now getting into the role, you need to find a company that can... that is forward-looking to change, to fundamentally turn you into a value-add resource is not only the primary contact for the site, but also being putting you into a job role that you'll actually want to keep. You know how much turnover there is in CRAs? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, like every 6 months they go somewhere else.
It's because nobody likes doing the job. It's tough. It's a hard job because it could be made easier. I firmly believe that technology used properly with a great user experience and data at your fingertips will allow you to not only do your job better, it changes what your job is, and it allows you to be more efficient. You'll probably be able to handle way more studies as one person,
sure,
as a CRA, using the data that allows you to see things without having to travel and be on site, right? You'll be able to predict issues faster. Machine learning will kick in and help you do your job and find needles in the haystack. And if you're going to go work for a company, you better see that their technology is either at least on the road to going there or already there. Because if they are not, you're not going to have a good time working there. It's going to be frustrating.
You're not going to have a job at some point.
And it will eventually become redundant. But I don't think the CRA role will not be eliminated. It is fundamentally going to change. I don't think they're going to lay off an army of CRAs. I think they're just going to be able to be able to do more.
More and studies.
The capacity of a CRO will be able to increase without massively increasing headcount. So I don't think people's jobs are in jeopardy, but they need to be able to be adaptable to the coming tide and change, and technology will help do that. And if it does, if it goes well, the technology should be welcomed and easy to use, like a delight to use. Like remember years ago, we kind of come full circle in a way. The technology, when you went to work in the 90s, and by the way, I was still in college in the 90s, so, you went to work and people were using archaic systems. And some of my colleagues tell me horror stories of the old days of using God knows whatever system that was only tied to Internet Explorer 6. And, you could not upgrade any browsers. I have pharma companies that were on Office 97 until 2008.
Wow.
So things like that. And then you went home and you had like AOL and really cool internet tools, and the technology was way better at home than at work. Why can't the technology at work be as good as the stuff you use at home with the new apps that are coming out and releasing new features,
new
every
tools,
quarter?
Yeah, we started using Slack internally for our sites and our CRO, and it's amazing. And HIPAA compliant. I mean, they made everything that we needed it to be. And there's other more formal ones like Intralinks Via, which is one that we use for our academy, and virtual workspaces. Are you guys into virtual workspaces at all?
Not in the same way as Intralinks is. I think that we've... there have been companies that have integrated some of our tools with the virtual workspaces. We do have a regulated content management and basically an electronic trial master file, ETMF, that so sites can upload documents and things like that in that particular space, and that plugs into a view that all the monitors can see, and ticking off all your documents that you need to start the study, things like that. Study startup type stuff.
Good chat, Joe. We're gonna do it again. Where can people find you?
So you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is @eClinical.
I'll put it underneath the video. And he's also on LinkedIn, and he goes to every conference. I mean, how often are you out? Like, you're out every week.
I'm on the road quite a bit. I do speak at probably 3 or 4 conferences a year. And I have lately been speaking on a lot of topics around mobile health and the future of, like, what does patient centricity really mean in the clinical trial?
We get into that next time, but shouldn't it have always been patient centric? Like, I don't get that buzzword.
Or like, capturing real world evidence in a real world evidence trial, also known as life.
Right. Exactly.
In my world, I'll be successful if going to this conference will be worth it, and doing the work that I do, which by the way is super fun every day. So Medidata is just an awesome culture. It's really fun. I'll be happy when we stop calling it digital health and just call it health. So
we're getting there. We're getting there. And then I'm looking forward to getting paid in Bitcoin.
They need some Bitcoin, for sure.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. And this is Dan from theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Take care. So hey everybody, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, Dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.